On Talk of the Nation, we're running a week-long series exploring the current situation in Iraq, and we're going to turn our conversation now to emerging Iraqi leaders. The chaos that followed the fall of Saddam Hussein's regime left many Iraqis hungry for leadership to step in and restore order, as well as to instill a sense of national purpose. Returning exiles and established clerics are vying for public favor and, in some cases, American approval for their own leadership ambitions. Their campaign tools range from religious authority to formidable foreign connections to their own private armies. Who are these men, and should America be wary of their plans for Iraq's future? Joining us now is Edmund Garib, a professor of international service at American University, and good of you to be with us again.
Thank you, Neil.
The religious leader Ayatollah Mohammed Bakr Hakim just made a triumphant return to the Iraqi city of Najaf after decades of exile in Iran. Is this a cause for concern?
Well, I think Ayatollah al-Hakim is an important figure. He heads the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. It's an organization, one of the main Shia opposition groups with a constituency in southern Iraq, and it did have a base in Iran. Hakim was close to the Iranian leadership for a long time. He led a movement against the Saddam Hussein government, and his group was also very much involved in the uprising 1991 after the first Gulf War, in which his forces, the Badr Brigades, were involved in that uprising and launched attacks against Baathists and supporters of the government, and then later on many of his forces and supporters were crushed by the Iraqi military.
His group, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq, was at some times associated with other Iraqi exile groups and at sometimes not, but aren't all of them tainted to some degree by the fact that they were absent from Iraq for so many years?
There are differences between the different groups and different individuals. I think some of them, especially those who did not have much of a base inside Iraq, they are not well known inside the country. They are not seen as representative. Many of them are perceived as being backed by foreign forces, either the United States or Britain, or by regional forces in the area. So this raises some questions about their credibility. It also raises some questions about their ability to attract some people. However, there are differences among the groups. Some of them, as SIRI, the Supreme Council, do have some support on the ground. They have been working underground for a while. They have also had some military forces operating, particularly in the northern part of Iraq, and recently there were reports that they had begun to move into the southern part, and the United States issued warnings to Iran. There's another important group which is known as the Dawah Party, the Call Party, the Islamic Call Party. It's an important force on the ground. It's been operating underground. It's a Shiite group also, and they have been very active against the regime. They were active in the 70s. And in the early 80s against the government, and they are more independent. Their relations with Iran have not been very good. So that's another important group, and they try to focus more on Iraqi identity and also a pan-Arab identity, but they are, to a certain extent, splintered. There are two other Shiite forces which are also significant, and these are the religious leaders, the clergy, especially Ayatollah al-Sistani, Ali al-Sistani, the grand Ayatollah, the highest source of emulation or leadership among the Shia in Iraq, but he has been the least political of the groups. He has, in fact, shunned politicization of religion, and he has been opposed to the idea of the government of the jurisprudent, which is the type of government that is in Iran. There's also a fourth figure who has emerged among the Shia, and this is Muqtada Sadr, whose father was assassinated in 1999, and whose uncle, another member of the family, a very prominent Shiite intellectual and leader of the Dawah Party, was executed by the regime in 1980. And so he's been emerging as an important force, both in the city of Thawra, which is what used to be known as Saddam Hussein's city in Baghdad, and in Najaf, which is an important center for Shiite learning. So these are very important figures on the ground, and then there are others, of course.
We're speaking with Edmund Garib, who's the co-author of the book War in the Gulf, 1990-91, The Iraq-Kuwait Conflict and Its Implications. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Edmund Gharib, as you talked about the Shia forces, one of the other exiles quickly that you mentioned, I guess, sort of in passing, Ahmed Chalabi, the leader of the Iraqi National Congress, a favorite among some members of the Defense Department, whose credibility has been questioned, indeed his integrity has been questioned.
Well, Ahmed Chalabi is an influential figure. He's been influential in Washington. He has close relations with members of Congress, with some people in the media, with the elements within the Department of Defense. And he has recently sent some of his own followers into Iraq with the support of the United States. He's trying to broaden his base, to strengthen his base of support inside of Iraq. He's not as well known as some of the other people. He's more secular, he's perceived as being close to the United States. But there are also other figures. There is the monarchist movement of Sharif Ali ibn al-Hussein. He's also hoping to bring back the monarchy to Iraq. There is also a new group who include Sunni and Shia, who are a significant group in terms of their reputation, in terms of their credibility and experience, but they also, many of them, do not have a base of support. But together, they are an interesting group who could offer potential leadership. This is an independent group led by a man named Adnan al-Pachachi. He is a Sunni. He's a former foreign minister of Iraq before the Ba'ath came to power. He's been living in exile, but he's been able to organize a group of technocrats, professionals, former ministers, and they are back now in Iraq, and they are trying to, again, also do what others are doing, which is vie for popular support and try to maneuver to gain sympathy and support for their ideas.
We're talking a lot about the Shias. First of all, they were the most oppressed of the groups under Saddam Hussein, certainly for the last 10 or 12 years since the end of the first Gulf War, and they make up the majority of the population inside Iraq. The two Kurdish leaders who sort of divided power in the autonomous Kurdish zone of northern Iraq since the end of the Gulf War, the Mr. Barzani and Mr. Talabani, have they been able to establish, extend their power to the Kurds who were not previously under their control?
Yes, this is actually something very interesting. Both Kurdish leaders have sought to broaden their base of support. They have moved actually some of their offices into Baghdad. They are trying to organize inside Baghdad, in trying to appeal to Kurds who were not under their control before, but more interestingly, they are trying now to even to reach out to some of the Arab forces. The Kurds have been they have a strong military capability. They are the people who have had experience in running a government of their own under the tutelage to a certain extent of the United States and Britain under the protection. They have experience and they have in governing, and they are perceived as being both. They appeal to some of the Sunnis because they are Sunni, but they have had close relationship with the Shia because both groups were oppressed. So a great deal is going to depend on what role do the Kurds play and how are they to the success of their efforts to gain support among the Arab population.
Obviously, the personalities that are beginning to emerge and the maneuvering going on, all very preliminary, as discussions of a transitional government in Iraq are still at a very early stage. It's something we will be revisiting repeatedly over the weeks and months ahead. Edmund Gharib, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Edmund Gharib is a professor at the American University School of International Service, and he was with us on the phone from his office here in Washington, D.C. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.